Hi there, I'm London Mitchell. Welcome to our new webpage, chronicling the history of radio in Toledo. With my partner in this project, Lou Hebert, we have brought forth not just the nostalgia of those wonderful bygone broadcasts, but also the history that shows Toledo was an instrumental player in the early development of radio. So, with the beat of the brontosaurus stomp behind us, Lou and I wanted to walk you through what you'll find at this archive, why we are so excited about the project, and a lot of Toledo history. And now, Lou, it would be a good time to take everyone back to the very beginning.
Toledo can be called the cradle of radio broadcasting, without a doubt. I know the story of Lee DeForest and Frank Butler, early pioneers and the experimenters, back before there was such a thing as radio broadcasting, and they were doing experiments in Toledo, and it was, I believe it was Butler who suggested that radio be the term that we would call it. Before that, it was called wireless telegraphy. We're talking now 120 years ago, right? Where it started was Toledo, Ohio. There, you know, Lee DeForest is many people think Marconi is the father of radio or Tesla, but actually, when you come down to voice of radio, now there was telegraphy, you know, telegraph, wireless telegraphy, and I think Marconi and Tesla both have argued over that. But when it comes down to voice and putting voice over the air, that's Lee DeForest and Frank Butler. I don't think there's any question about that.
And those early experiments with sending voice over the airwaves happened here in Toledo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1907. That's how far back. 1907. Yeah.
And I think as people wander through our website here, they'll learn that the first land-to-sea communication, I believe, was from our area, as well as the first radio-dispatched police cars.
right
here.
Exactly. And that land-to-sea was, just so people know, and they may be familiar with it, if you've been to Put-in Bay, there is a sign, an Ohio Historical Commission sign, that commemorates that. And then that was DeForest and Butler again. And that was during the famous Mills race, the Mills Trophy race at Port Clinton and Put-in Bay. So that's where the first voice communication happened between land and sea. And that was recorded back, I think, also in 1907.
And I think that many people would say, wow, that's pretty interesting. But I remember radio back in the late 50s, early 60s. And probably most of the people that will be visiting this website are boomers. And just a piece of nostalgia for you and I think this is the first time we've done anything jointly in the way of radio since back in the early 70s when
that's
we
right.
were on WTTO together.
That's right.
Doing the morning
That's
show. Right. Yeah, long time. But for those who remember radio back in the early 60s or mid 60s when we were in high school, I think there's a lot of nostalgia. Many of us remember the names that were on radio, a lot of them inspiring ourselves to get involved, to think of radio as a career.
Oh yeah, most definitely, and I think that if you talk to almost anybody in radio, at least of our vintage, they'll go along with that same notion. And you know, I remember I got a transistor radio when I was a kid in the early '60s. I think '60 or '61 is when I got my first transistor radio, and it was like magic because you could, you know, at night I would, you know, tune into all these stations all across the country and disc jockeys and listen to, you know, WLS in Chicago and Dick Biondi and WCFL in Chicago, KYW in Philadelphia. There were just, you know, you could listen, you could tune in the world at night on AM radio and hear all of these voices. And that definitely inspired me to want to go into radio in some way. And I ended up becoming a ham radio operator. And then And then I was always fascinated by the magic of radio, because it's, you think about it, it's like somebody said to me a long time ago, they said, you know, it's like, it's invisible. It's up in the air. And all of a sudden it's in your ear. You know, it's like, and it comes from thousands of miles away. It's almost like a magic trick.
And we called it the skip. And
yeah, the skip. Right?
Most people don't listen to AM radio anymore, but at night, boy, you could pull in those faraway stations and KMOX and WLS.
And if we were really lucky and the skip was right, you could get KOA in Denver. So that was once in a while, you could pick them up at 85, 850. But, you know, closer to home, you know, I remember listening at night to, I had also started with a crystal radio. And so the only station you could hear on a crystal radio where I grew up out in Genoa was WSPD, which had the biggest signal at night. And I remember listening to Art Berry in People's Opinion. So, you know, that goes back a few years.
That was my first real introduction to talk radio, other than, you know, picking up on the disc jockeys, right, and the music. My grandfather was a regular caller into People's Opinion.
Oh, yeah?
I have some recordings of him on the air that I took my little handheld cassette recorder back in those days and recorded his voice off the radio using alligator clips. Remember, yeah, alligator clips? Yeah. How we would do that. Some of the radio personalities that really jump out at me from those early days: Larry O'Brien, John Gary. A few years later on, the Mojo Man, and as we have some recordings of interviews that I've done with other personalities getting into the later 60s, Buddy Carr, and then we got into rap back in the 70s.
Right, at WOHO. Excuse me one second, London. For our younger viewers, we're not talking about rap music. We're talking about rap being a talk show. R-A-P, rap. Was a talk, because that's what you used to say in the early 70s to be hip. It wasn't, hey, let's chat, let's rap.
That's true. That was a big gamble, I think, for WOHO radio to abandon the rock and roll music and go to all talk. But it paid off for a lot of years. And I think there was a lot of worthwhile discussion, especially for the younger generation. They had an opportunity to talk, to ask questions, to share thoughts.
Yeah, well, it was they had rap, and I remember there was another earlier talk show. I think WTOD did some talk back in the day, back when they were doing rock and roll music. That, by again, for those people not aware, that was at 1560. Was the AM dial for WTOD. And during the 60s and early 70s, especially the 60s, it was sort of the mecca of local rock and roll as far as the rock station. That's where you said you talked about John Gary and, let's see, Lee Fowler. There was Larry O'Brien, there Bill Webb, and, of course, Bob Kelly and Bob Martz and a whole host of others whose names and people that we have been lucky enough to work with in subsequent years.
As you wander through the website, you are going to experience a lot of those personalities, and especially Bob Kelly. I mean, there's somebody that you and I both have worked with over the years, and we have a recording of his induction into the Ohio Broadcast Hall of Fame, which is wonderful, and it is what do I want to say, grassroots Bob Kelly when he makes his when he makes his speech, of his acceptance speech. Funny story about Bob Kelly, I will tell you, and after you had worked with him as his newscaster, that I was able to join him in the studio. But years before either one of us worked with him, he was the morning disc jockey on WTOD. My cousin was visiting from England, She wanted to see an American disc jockey in action. And I went with her over to the WTOD studios out in the middle of this field out in South Toledo. He invited us in that Saturday morning and into the studio, and he was very cordial and very welcoming to her, allowed her to read the weather in her British accent. While we were in the studio just chatting with him, in walks the newscaster, a guy named Bob Zurek, sits in this big overstuffed chair in front of the control board, or on the opposite side of the control board from Bob Kelly, and he starts reading the news in this big, gruff newscaster voice. And as he gets to the point where he is reading about a local fire, Bob Kelly reaches over the control board with his cigarette lighter and sets fire to the copy. And so there he is reading the news. His copy is on fire. And as he's reading, he's dropping page by page onto the floor, stomping out the flames with his foot. Finally, there's no more copy left in his hands to read. He signs off, news beat, gets up out of his big chair, walks out of the studio, never breaks an expression, just walks out like it's a normal everyday occurrence. I'm
Maybe
standing
it was.
awestruck against the wall of the studio saying, you gotta be nuts to want to work with this guy. You know?
Yeah, that was an old trick that was done. I had that done to me once on the air many, many years ago in Iowa when I was working there. And the only thing you had is your defense. Back in those days, of course, at least in Iowa, all we had was a cough switch. Because we had an engineer controlling all the controls, so all we had was a cough switch. So if you wanted to break for a second and talk to somebody or say stop it, hey, what are you doing? You had to hit that cough switch. That was about it. That was your only escape. Yeah, I think I'm not sure that I handled this as with the same coolness as Bob Zurek when that happened to me the first time. I was 19 years old and fairly new in the business, and it was a good initiation, but I think I started laughing and couldn't stop all the way through reading the obituaries.
Well, that's the kind of fun thing that I think was going on in radio behind the scenes that kind of gave it a life that I'm afraid we're missing today. Kind of that I don't want to call it an inspirational spark, but certainly those ad libs made it sound like it was a whole lot more fun.
Well, it was, you know, it was fun. Radio was fun to listen to, and there were some great personalities, and there, I think there still are, but I'm not sure that we have the room for the great personalities that we did. And that was one of the cool things about radio. And as you know, spent 50 some years in doing radio and television, but I found with radio is you never knew. You work with so many great people, so many great personalities, and you never knew where they were going to end up or how it was, you know. What somebody always said, you know, in a market like Toledo, which was never a huge market, but it was sort of a medium market, they said, you know, in Toledo, you're either working with people on their way up or their way down. And that might have been the case. I certainly had that experience myself, but you did, and you know, you didn't know whether somebody was going to end up the next year selling cars or they were going to end up in Chicago. Start doing, you know, and becoming, you know, world or nationally famous. So it was cool. It was a lot of fun.
As we walked through, or as you stroll through our website, you are going to, I'm sure, hear some of the audio clips that will really trigger that nostalgia within you. We have hour after hour of radio jingles that will bring you back clips from what we call air checks, so that you can hear what's actually going out over the airwaves 40, 50 years ago to remind us. But I think it's also giving a feeling that Toledo really was a together community. We were kind of bonding over some of these personalities, especially as you mentioned WTOD. I remember listening to John Gary. He always had somebody that he was calling out to. It is be kind to Louie Verde, you know, or something like that. You know, so I think as a community, we really got to be kind of tight. It's a shared memory, so to speak.
Well, and radio represented something totally different from what it does today, because radio was really, let's face it, we didn't have really, television didn't come into really its full force and being until probably the mid-50s. And well, we didn't even have Channel 11, didn't even go on the air until 1958. So, you know, for many people, there was only one TV station in Toledo at the time. So radio was still, even through the 50s, it was still a major force in people's lives. And, you know, I'm sure you remember this as well, London. You know, when we were kids in the 50s, you listened with great anticipation every morning on a winter's day as to whether or not you were going to have school. There wasn't anything coming over the cell phone. There was nothing coming over the computer. You didn't get a phone call. You had to listen very carefully to whoever the announcer was doing school closings. And usually for us, it was always, of course, WSPD. And I think, you know, probably Jim Ubelhart, who, of course, was the voice in everybody's house for so many years. And then later, Don Edwards, when he became, I think he took over for Jim Ubelhart after Mr. Ubelhart retired. He has passed away now. But so it was just a different time. And we depended on radio. It was almost like a public utility, that it really served a lot of purposes and meant a lot of needs for a lot of different people. And that's why they called it broadcasting. It wasn't narrowcasting. It was called broadcasting because it was a wide net to be able to appeal to the needs and wants and desires of all of the people out there, not just a narrow fraction or narrow segment.
So much of what we now hear on radio is recorded, but that's not the way it was way back when.
Yeah, everything was live back in the early days, and even through the 80s and 90s, and we really didn't begin the, you know, canned shows as much until probably the last 20 years, if I think that's probably the case for most stations. But yeah, everything was live, and it was always exciting when it was live, because sometimes you never knew what was going to happen. And that's kind of what made it so much fun, I think, because it was kind of always, you were always, if you were live and it was so much of it unscripted and ad lib. So it was, you're always on sort of a razor's edge as to what might happen. And it was fun. It made it, it also, you know, one of the things that I recall was for those people who knew how to ad lib, you know, that was a guy like Bob Kelly, for example, was had an incredible ability to ad lib and ad lib with humor and be able to unwind a long story and with a punchline, never miss a beat. And those were the talents that, you know, were around back in those days. And I think that we miss and appreciate it.
I think my fascination with radio began with listening to my father sneak through the house going, the shadow knows. And we kind of came into listening to radio after what they call the golden age, when you had those adventure shows like The Shadow and the Green Hornet and a lot of the variety shows where people like Red Skelton and the Nelsons, you know, became household names because they were on the radio. But that fascination with voice, with being able to tell a story without seeing the visual, really intrigued me. The ability of a guy like Bob Kelly to tell a story and draw you in.
And, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was totally fascinated by it. I wish I had their talents because that's what really drew me into radio.
You know, one of the I remember one day working with Bob Kelly back in the mid-70s at WCWA. We were on of course of the morning show, and you know, there was a time when you never wanted dead air. And for the most part, if you took a break between songs, it was always the weather, maybe a live script for a commercial and a promo or something like that. But there was never a lot of chit chat. And if there was ad lib chit chat, the programmers usually said, you know, keep it to 25, 30 seconds and then boom, out of it. And then things started to happen. And Kelly was never satisfied with that. And I remember the morning he went on the air. It was early. It was about 5:30, I think, when he went on the air, and he started talking about his childhood, and he didn't stop. He went on for a half an hour, like a half hour monologue, didn't even go to commercials, just kept this monologue going. And I'm sitting there just gobsmacked, thinking, oh my God, he's going to be in so much trouble. But then, you know, it occurred to me after about 10 minutes as he's going into this long monologue about his boyhood and growing up in Copley, Ohio, and what it was like to go into the business and how he got started. It was so fascinating. I think listeners were probably glued to it, and he did not get in trouble for it. And in fact, I always sort of credit that moment as sort of a eureka moment in the radio. It was like, wow, there's real power in somebody who can tell a long story and make it interesting. And I think I'll just never forget that because it was a real head turner, and I love the story, and you know, I loved him for doing it.
Of all the people that I've worked with down through the years, I think he had the fastest brain I've ever encountered.
He was very quick. He was very quick, and he could come up with ad libs very, 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 very quickly, and some of them can be quite cutting if he wanted to be. But yeah, we'll have that's one of the things we're going to have on the website is a lot of clips with Bob and other people from WTOD and people. We're going to try to go back into as far back as we can go and try to find some of those old air checks and recordings. I think that's one of our problems. Nobody was really recording a lot of things in the 30s and 40s, but that stuff is out there if we can find it, and we will endeavor to do that. I guess we would advise anyone if anyone has those recordings, if you have recordings that are early recordings of anyone from Toledo Radio, let us know. And if you want to share, we're hoping that this new site will be a platform where we want people to also offer their input as well as to what they remember about radio and some of the memories and just, you know, some of the interesting things that how radio might have affected their lives.
As the word got out about this project that we're developing with this website, I was presented with two great big transcription discs from WSPD Radio, and one of them has a lot of drop-ins, things they probably, I'm guessing here, probably used as drop-ins between programs or between records. I say probably, and this is my guess, because I'm still looking for a device that will play those big transcriptions so I can hear what's actually on them. And it's not just audio that we have a lot of photographs and for those who love music and nostalgia, we have years' worth of WTOD popometers with top 40s and top 40. We also have some historical documents. Good buddy of ours, Jerry Toth, presented me with years worth of a monthly magazine produced by Storer Broadcasting, WSPD, of course, being the flagship of Storer Broadcasting, that date way back into the 40s. So we have a history of broadcasting, radio and TV, coming at us through the years for anybody who's really into wanting to look at the history of broadcasting, not just in Toledo, but the influence Toledo had across the country.
Yeah, and so many, really, some mentioned it before, but there were a lot of really good broadcasters that either started here or passed through here on their way to bigger and better things. And obviously, you know, we can think of a few immediately. Of course, there was Paul W. Smith, who was here in Toledo, and I think he started here, but it went on to WJR and success up there. And of course, Gary and O'Brien, who were at WTOD, they ended up in, well, O'Brien was at WCFL in Chicago for a while, as was I for a short period of time. But then he and Gary ended up doing a two-man show for years and became an institution in Pittsburgh. And they were, the Gary and O'Brien show was quite popular in Pittsburgh. So there were, yeah, a number of people who like I say, passed through or started here, but we had, and I think part of it was, and, you know, we can get into this later as we continue these talks as we would like, we want to do and make this sort of a regular thing. And maybe we'll try to bring in some other radio personalities from the day and talk about things, but we have a good Midwestern accent here. I think that was one of the reasons why we have, and I've heard this said, we just we don't have a real deep Southern accent. We don't have the Columbus accent or the Cincinnati accent, but Detroit and Toledo, Cleveland, up along the Great Lakes, we're sort of without an accent. Now, some people from, you know, other parts of the country would dispute that, but whatever, ours is pretty pretty neutral, pretty standard, I guess, standard speech. So that helps too, you know. And but it was, it's been a joy to work in, you know, Toledo radio, and I was in it for many years, and then I went. Of course, I moved around a bit and went to Colorado and Chicago and a few other places, and worked in Denver, but always came back. I wanted to come back to my roots here in Toledo, and of course ended up in television for a while, but still do some radio work from time to time if I can. It's enjoyable.
I got bit by the bug and it's still biting me. I love the communication.
You know, I think sometimes I don't say this too loudly, but I really think, you know, I could do this with and not be paid for it. You know, sometimes just doing it and being on the air and doing, and of course I did news a lot as well as other disc jockey work, but mostly news. That was almost reward in and of itself sometimes, to know that you were getting information out there to people who appreciated it and wanted that information and sometimes needed that information. You know, I can recall many times in Denver and other places I worked in Toledo where we were actually providing that community service, which was what radio should be doing. And yeah, it was a good feeling.
I hear what you're saying. I think all those years and years and years I did morning newscasts, I felt that there was a bond with the audience, that they were tuned in. Mm-hmm. And when I go out in the public and people would take a look at my credit card and recognize the name and talk to me, that was really a reward. I said to myself, how many people have jobs that are important but don't make that connection with the people that actually benefit?
Right.
And it really did wonders for my ego. What can I tell you?
Well, then there's that. Yeah. We won't talk about ego, but no, it's a lot of fun. And I hope that people will, come to the website and again, offer suggestions, anything that you think we've missed as far as, and I'm sure there'll be some great ideas that are going to come from all over as to how we can improve the website and things we can add to it. And, I'm looking forward to it because I think there are so many different roads we can travel on this journey through radio.
And please, not just one visit, but keep visiting often because, as Lou mentioned, we are going to keep these little visits going and we'll bring in guests, people from radio years gone by, people from radio today that can talk about their journey through broadcasting and their experiences. And you will attest to the fact, Mr. Hebert, that we have met some, how do I want to put this, some defining personalities along the way.
Oh, yeah.
And stories that we may tell in a recorded message and maybe...
Yeah, there are some stories that are probably, as they say, not suitable for the workplace. but then again, maybe we can do the other side. Some of the stories that are the adult version stories, and there are plenty of those.
As we say in the business, stay tuned.
Stay tuned. That's right. We'll be back right after this.